For WTOP News, it's The Book Report, and I'm Sarit King. When Sean Waite left home for a two-day international business trip, his wife Jessica would have had no way of knowing that she would never see him alive again, and that it would also be the end of one journey for her through a tumultuous marriage and the beginning of a whole new trip. Jessica Waite tells her story in the new memoir, The Widow's Guide to Dead Bastards, out from Atria Books. And it is my pleasure to welcome you, Jessica, to the Book Report today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Tariq, thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to be here.
I've got to tell you, as I'm sure many people have, I came for the title. The title absolutely jumps off the cover. How did that title come to be?
The title was actually a joke suggestion by my late husband, Sean's one of his very best friends. And I kept it on my whiteboard for about a year. And then when we were ready to go on submission with this manuscript, the title that I had at the time was a little bit earnest and hard to remember. And so I asked my agent, what do you think of this? And she's like, goal, do you have the guts to put it on the front? And I asked my son, he was okay with it. And then away we went.
In your book, you describe really uncovering some shocking secrets about your late husband. So can you talk a little bit in broad terms about what the story is, what you discovered?
Yeah. So as you mentioned off the top, Sean was on a business trip away from home. He traveled a lot with work. And the day after his funeral, a box of his personal effects arrived, and I started to find out that he'd been keeping secrets from me. So he had been compulsively spending money. He was hiding debt with a high limit credit card. I found infidelity. I found drug use. And then also, as I weirdly guessed the password to his iPad and started to find out that he had been addicted to pornography and that he had built up, basically since the advent of the internet, an enormous cache of pornography that I didn't know anything about when he was alive.
What you describe in the book as the porn matrix, this wasn't just a collection with some files. There was a complex system of categorization and downloads and things.
So yeah, first I was looking at the content, but after that I looked at the timestamps and I started to see patterns of behavior of when he wasn't well. And it made me understand that there was some other kind of like an addictive quality driving him. It wasn't that he was just a complete sex maniac or that type of thing. Like, he was a very reasonably adjusted person in a lot of ways, but there was this thing that he couldn't control. This is sort of how I came to the compassion in it, because it just seemed like he was not in charge of himself as it related to doing this organization. And what I've come to understand is there's a lot in the way that these are set up with technology that are meant to kind of loop you in, and like they're designed to addict. There are big forces at play here.
Yeah. And you encountered one of those forces while you were exploring it, because what did that pop-up ad say?
Yeah, there was a pop-up ad that said, your wife doesn't love you. Your wife doesn't love you, flashing. And I saw that and I thought, wow, like some advertiser is like blinking this lie into my husband's eyes late at night when he's vulnerable and when he's already in a, you know, not at his best, strongest. This is where I think I had a lot of moral outrage. It stopped serving me at a certain point, and I had to start to look and see, like, okay, this is a human being. These are human qualities. And maybe if we're less judgmental of one another, we can take some steps toward, you know, healing and supporting each other.
And the book mentions that you experienced what I could only describe as sort of inexplicable coincidences that made you feel like your husband was trying to contact you. Talk a little bit about that.
My TV was coming on by itself. The stereo turned on by itself. The light bulbs were burning out. And it was just a very, like, those things didn't used to happen. And, you know, part of me was like, well, is it Sean? But if it is, I'm still mad at him. So I don't want to like connect back in that way. And so then I was like, well, am I making it up? Am I going mad? And so the second half of the story is a lot about kind of sense making about can relationships heal beyond the veil of death? If your relationship's in a broken or stuck place and there's things left undone or unsaid, can you get some kind of resolution? That's what I'm really pursuing at the latter half of the story.
Stylistically, I think you did a really great job of balancing wit and humor with the heavy subjects of grief and betrayal. How did you strike a balance in your narrative between those two energies?
Yeah, I come by gallows humor quite naturally. It was like in my family, I think a lot of people who have gone through some things in their life can tend toward dark humor. And so to me, it's just kind of at some point things become absurd. Like it's so bad that all you can do is laugh. I think I loved Carrie Fisher and she said, if my life wasn't funny, then it would just be true. And that's unacceptable. And so I love it, thinking of it that way.
When you open the cover, past the title itself, the memoir is just incredibly raw and honest. So what motivated you to share such a personal and painful journey with the public?
In essence, I started to write for myself, for my own sort of catharsis and healing. But as I made some progress with that and started feeling a bit more, you know, together in my life, I started to realize, you know, show me someone out there who has never grieved. Show me someone who hasn't been betrayed or had some kind of like kick in the butt from life. And you know, it feels so isolating, but actually what I was going through is things that a lot of people go through. And so that was what inspired me to kind of shape this into a story that would be something that people would want to read.
What did this journey and the writing of this memoir teach you about lessons in forgiveness?
I could not will myself to forgive. Like I tried so many times and there were a few people that needed forgiving in this story, like myself among them. I don't behave the best. I do. I'm really, you know, at some of my worst moments come through in this story. So there was me, there was Sean, there was, you know, there's a revenge story that takes place in this well. So there's like other person or people. And I really just tried to muscle my way through because I've always thought that we forgive for ourselves and that it's freeing to forgive. But I just couldn't make, like it just kept, I would try and fail and try and fail. And so in the end, what I think happens is that when we come into real compassion, forgiveness just floods us and we don't have to do any action. It's just something that emerges when we can sort of have empathy and stand in another person's shoes and feel compassion for the whole. It doesn't have to be like directed at a specific person.
This is not a prescriptive book. We want to make sure that we understand that this is you telling your story, yeah, how you lived it, because there are folks who might take the title, it's well-phrased, but they might think it's self-help, and that's not where you're coming from. So what do you want people to take away from your telling of your story?
I would be happy if people took away a couple of things. One is that they are not alone. Like as much as it feels isolating, as much as it feels like you're on your own, you're not. And so you can find your way back to other people through story, through telling your own story and reading the stories of others. So that's one. And the other one is really about the power of paying attention in your own life to your relationship. You know, if I had paid a little bit closer attention, things might not have got so far gone in terms of the tumult of the relationship. There might have been different outcomes. But also paying attention to the synchronicity and the wonder. Even in our worst moments, there's beautiful things around us. And it's just, I feel like that's the thing that led me out of the deepest part of my despair, was just finding a little bit of beauty.
Well, it was a wonderful read. The Widow's Guide to Dead Bastards is a memoir, an unforgettable memoir that's out from Atria Books. And thank you so much for being with us on the Book Report today.
Thanks for having me.
And I thank everyone for listening to this edition of The Book Report. For WTOP News, I'm Tariq King.